proceed. Good morning, Mr. Rigby.
Morning. May it please the court, my name is Thomas Riley, myself and co-counsel from April Lucas from the Public Defender's Office in Douglas County are here on behalf of the appellant Mitchell Nguyen, who was convicted of first-degree murder and use of a firearm to commit a felony. Since we only have 10 minutes, unless the court wants me to go through a recitation of the facts, I'll go right to the issues.
Sounds like a good plan.
Okay. One of the main pieces of evidence in this case is a text message that was detected by the Omaha Police Department when they did a forensic search of the deceased's phone. And they were able to extract the content of a text message, the origin of which they also were able to extract from the phone of the deceased to a phone number that was, upon their further investigation, registered to the defendant's dad. At the time this was going on, the defendant was a high school student. The content of the text message is set out in my brief, and basically it says, from the phone of the deceased, I got dro, which is apparently marijuana. Then from the other phone, I'd coo. I'm about to run to the bank, then I'm get some both. Are you gonna look out? And it says, the deceased, call me. And then it says, I'd. I'm assuming that means all right. Okay. The theory of the case for the state was that this was a drug ripoff that was set up, at least in part, as a result of this phone contact. Our objection was that in the absence of demonstrating that the statement was from the defendant, it's a hearsay statement. Obviously, if it can be proved that the defendant is admissible, because it's a statement of a party, opponent. And under 27901, the authentication requirement, in our opinion, was not met. And the court wrestled with it. As a matter of fact, originally agreed with us. And then upon further reflection, the court reversed her decision and allowed it in. The cases in Nebraska that deal with cell phones, I cited Elsman, Taylor, and Pullins. And Elsman and Taylor are cases I personally was involved in, so I kind of know about them. And in the Elsman case, the authentication was pretty easy because the states had a witness who was on the other end of the phone during the phone call. On Terrell Taylor, state wanted to prove that the cell phone belonging to Mr. Taylor and of his co-defendant were in contact at the time shortly after the homicide, and they had evidence from a witness who saw the defendant, Mr. Taylor, talking on the phone saying, hurry up, come and get me, immediately after the shooting. But once again, the authentication was pretty easy. Pullins is probably the one that's most close, I would say, because it involved an email correspondence between a police officer and the defendant. And the authentication in that case was they had overwhelming evidence that the source was the defendant, Mr. Pullins, in that he was over a period of months in a ongoing conversation through emails with the Omaha police officer. His name, they used each other's name. He talked about facts that only would be known by him, because he was talking about the deceased in that case with Pullen's mom. He was talking about his mom. So once again, the authentication was what I think pretty substantial amount of evidence. In this case,
Mr. Riley, I think there's one case that I don't believe it had been released by the time you did your briefing. The recent case of State versus Henry from the Supreme Court,
right,
and text messages. Do you want to address that?
Well, once again, I don't think that case is dispositive of this case, because the differences are, in this case, the only authentication that the state is relying on is the fact that the phone is in the name of the defendant's dad. They did have some testimony that the defendant, Mr. Nguyen, was a user of the phone in the month that the homicide occurred, but not an exclusive user of the phone.
Was there evidence somebody else used it during that month?
I'm sorry?
Was there evidence that somebody else other than Mr. Wynn used the phone attributed to him?
I believe that the defendant's mother had testified that he wasn't the exclusive user of it. I think when asked, they said, well, can you tell me on a certain date, did a certain person use it? She said, well, no, I don't know. The defendant wasn't arrested until about 5 or 6 months after the homicide occurred, and asking, you know, who was using a phone on a certain date, she wasn't able to do that.
That phone, if I understand it, that phone disappeared right at the time of the murder.
Shortly thereafter, they reported that it had been stolen. I think maybe several months. The murder happened in July. The first time they spoke with the defendant was in October, and asking about the phone, and he had said that he had lost the phone, couldn't say exactly when it was. The police never found the phone. Well, I suggest.
Is there any evidence at all that would tie up the defendant's father, who was the registered owner of the phone, with the person sending or receiving these texts?
No. No. I suggest in my brief that given the technological advances that we have, I know the cases have always said that the authentication is a pretty low threshold, but I think that with the advance in technology, that and if they want to use the content, then I think the threshold has to be reexamined. And I cited some cases from some other jurisdictions, all of which kind of said, hey, just because someone is the owner of a phone standing alone isn't going to be enough to satisfy the authentication requirement. And I think that, as I said, given the situation that we have now with the mobility of these phones, that they can be used by anybody, there's nothing in the content, unlike in Pullen's and in some of the other cases I cited, there's nothing in the content of this text message that indicates the identity of the person who is making the statements, other than we're assuming that the deceased is making the statements from his phone, which in and of itself also is a bit of a leap. So I think that the courts in Nebraska need to reexamine that threshold and say there needs to be something more than the fact that a cell phone is registered to a dad of a suspect, and that the suspect had at least some use of access to the phone is enough to say that the person is the person who sent the text message. And I also think there should be a difference, and the state didn't even address this in their brief. I think there should be a difference in the threshold on if they're just trying to establish did this phone have contact with another phone versus the actual content of a text message, because the text message could be sent by anyone. And like I said, so it depends on what they're trying to prove. And the cases seem to say in the authentication, the proponent does have some control over it, and they have to say what's the basis of the admissibility. What are they trying to prove by it? In this case, they're trying to prove that this was a drug setup, which even looking at it, that's a bit of a stretch. I only have a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to address the question of mistrial, and I'll submit the sufficiency evidence on the briefs if that's all right to the court. I'm reluctant to accuse opposing counsel of misconduct, and I don't know that this was something that was necessarily planned out to be. I don't think it was intentional. I don't care what the rules are. I'm going to say this anyway. But the fact remains that in final argument, the prosecutor, the cops had a whole bunch of other phone calls that were made, including one from a phone number that occurred just minutes before the homicide. The prosecutor said, and we don't know who this phone number it belongs to, and that's not true. As a matter of fact, they interviewed the person who the phone was connected to a week previously and identified who the person was.
But didn't the prosecutor clarify that we don't know based upon the evidence that was submitted at trial?
They tried,
there was no evidence about this third person.
That's correct. I did, when I made a motion for mistrial, I did submit some evidence showing that, hey, wait a minute, you guys did talk to this person. You do, too, know who it is. What happened is the court was somewhat concerned about it, and the court said, okay, well, in rebuttal, see if you can clean it up. But I don't think she really cleaned it up very, very well. And as a matter of fact, kind of muddied it. Cases that I've read talk about how important it is for prosecutors not to imply to juries that we know more. We, you know, that maybe the rules don't allow us to get this stuff in, but we have more information, and you're just going to have to trust us. And he's saying, well, we don't know this. Well, it's kind of a reverse situation there. They do, too, know it. And it's the person who was about two blocks from the scene. When they saw him right after the murder, he was about two blocks from the murder scene. So I think there's a significant amount of prejudice there that the jury would misinterpret that statement. And it's prejudicial to the defendant that such a mistrial should have been granted. I don't have any further time, unless you have other questions. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Counsel? Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Melissa Vincent. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Wynn raises three claims on appeal. I don't intend to address the sufficiency. I will submit that one on the brief. However, I will briefly address the other two. Wynn first claims the district court erred in admitting the text messages into evidence because they were not sufficiently authenticated. More specifically, he claims the state produced insufficient evidence to show he authored the text messages. The standards governing authentication are set forth in Rule 901, which provides the requirement of authentication or identification as a condition precedent to admissibility is satisfied by evidence sufficient to support a finding the evidence is what the proponent claims. This is not a stringent standard, and because authentication rulings are necessarily fact-specific, they must be determined on a case-by-case basis and are reviewed for an abuse of discretion. Now, under Nebraska law, the proponent of a text message is not required to conclusively prove the defendant authored the messages or to rule out that someone else may have written the messages using his cell phone. Moreover, text messages, much like emails, may be authenticated by circumstantial evidence establishing that the evidence is what the proponent claims it to be. That is the approach that the state used in this case. The evidence showed that the 8070 number was assigned to an account belonging to Wynn's father. Wynn's mother testified that Wynn was the person using that phone in July 2013, and in the days and hours leading up to the murder, Wynn had several phone contacts, both incoming and outgoing, with various family members and his girlfriend. For example, on the date of the murder, in between the calls between what I would call the gray number and Haynes, he exchanged several text messages with his brother. He made a phone call to his girlfriend, and then after the text messages exchanged with Haynes right around 12:30, later that afternoon, he exchanged text messages and phone calls with his father, and then about 30 minutes before the murder occurred, his mother called him on that phone. So based on those contacts, it certainly appears the phone was in Wynn's possession and that he was using it for communication. Accordingly, the district court correctly determined the text had been sufficiently authenticated and thus did not abuse his discretion in admitting them into evidence. Wynn also claims the district court erred in denying his motion for mistrial based on prosecutorial misconduct during closing arguments. However, the prosecutor's remarks were based on evidence presented at trial, which is entirely proper. Furthermore, the prosecutor's failure to disclose the identity of the person using the gray number was not misleading because it had no effect on the inference to be drawn from the evidence. In other words, it was immaterial.
Do you think that the attempt to clear it up in the rebuttal portion of the closing argument muddied the water such that there could be an inference that Mr. Wynn was also the user of this gray number, this third phone?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And actually, it was cleared up in the initial closing argument. The prosecutor said, hey, no, there's been no evidence that's presented to you in this case. And then, of course, in rebuttal, she again cleared it up, and then the district court gave a limiting instruction. But as far as, I think what the inference here wasn't necessarily that Wynn was using those phones. The point that the state's theory of the case was that he's working with another person, and we have evidence showing that because of the surveillance video. He shows up with another individual. We have all of these contacts between him and this gray number. And that those occur both before and after the contacts with Haynes. And then, of course, we have two calls from that gray number to Haynes just 4 minutes before he's murdered, and those are the only two phone calls from that number to Haynes' number during this entire episode. So it certainly suggests that the person that was using the phone is the person that was working with Wynn, and I'm just not sure that the prosecutor had enough evidence to actually bring charges against that person.
Was that person also a suspect initially in the case?
He may have been. I don't know for
Does
sure.
Does that matter here, that he was an initial suspect?
I don't believe so, because I don't think it does anything to exonerate or exculpate Wynn. So unless there are any further questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Good.
No further questions. Thank you. The appellant's out of time. Counsel, thank you. You are both excused and your case is submitted. Next case this morning is State versus McCrickert.